Oh, yes, my friends. It's the Sharon Sleeve Show.
Take my hat, take my coat, take my gloves, I'll take a cup. Take my money, but I'm begging, please don't take my shoes. Take my house, take my clothes, take my wife, lighten up my load. Take my feet, you can take my toes, but please don't take my shoes.
From the downtowniest part of New York City, the city that never sleeps, the city that never weeps, the city where nothing keeps.
Coming to you live on
WCAD 90.2, New York. I have talked to
I think I've said this before. I think I've said this. I should really just sing the song. I don't know why I have myself singing and then I sing along with it. That's not right. You know, it's all right to sing along with someone else, sing along with Sally, but when you sing along with yourself, it's like having a hamburger and another hamburger. You only want one. You'd like something different. But that's a problem that I've got. Also, I don't remember the words. I don't even know the other words. Coming to you live, WC. Now, I don't know those words, but I have a great facility to say exactly the same thing that's being said to me at almost the exactly same time. Or almost exactly at the same time. This is something, it's a talent, I suppose. It's a kind of mimicking, but it's deeper than that. It's a type of an alongsideness. It's disturbing. I don't know how to account for it. Maybe sometime I'll bring someone in here and I'll say exactly what they say. It sounds like a slight echo. Nearly the same time they do. Or maybe I'll just play back all this beginning opening 2 minutes and not through the speaker, and then I'll say it all alongside myself like I do with the opening song. And then I'll do it again and again and again and again. Because there can never be too many of us coming at you live. Now, this is a sort of an impromptu radio ghost. I wasn't expecting to do it, but I went for a walk this evening and I recorded it. As I say, I don't always record, but it was so cold out, I thought, well, that's a different thing. It's 0 degrees. Let's see what happens. That's a wild experiment in temperature shifts. So if something odd is happening, if there are shooting stars or a full moon or there are wolves around, I'll more than likely grab the recorder. If it's raining or there's something awful out there, puddles, Just give me something to bounce off of, an interactive feature, because I have no one walking with me. So that's the conversation that I have, is with the environment, the atmosphere. It helps me converse with you. So I was out there, and I realized I hadn't a thing to say. Of course, it's cold. And then I realized that maybe I wasn't being tampered with by enough information. I wasn't reading magazines or books, or I haven't for the last few days. And those are the little things spark. I also haven't spoken to anyone. So I've come into a dormant period. Very mattress-like, very pillow-like, very cat-like. Declining in places quietly, but no stimulation coming in at all. And I realized that it was that I had read Pride and Prejudice. I don't want to say all the things that I say in the walk, but let us say that during the walk I realized that I wanted to read something that arose out of the twit of a tweet that someone tweeted. Now, the tweeter was not a twit, I don't mean to apply that. We'll talk about that afterwards. So we're going to go into the walk where I realize that I'm vacant and empty and pillow-like. And then, as I realize this little thing that I want to do, and I'll do it after the walk, and we'll talk a little bit more about that then. So here is my walk in the cold, brainless as can be, and the little fun to me, challenge, adventure, no, I don't know. It's a something. I realized that I wanted to do a very particular something based off the twit of a tweet someone tweeted. It's cold, it's around zero. Looking directly into the heart of the polar vortex. Have we always had a polar vortex? We used to call it cold. Now it's a vortex that has been sent spinning down to us from the North Pole. I picture a tornado filled with ice cubes. Now it's perfectly windless, which is perhaps a symptom of this vortex stillness, the vortex that brings the quiet. There are certain types of temperatures. It's the heat or the cold relates to humidity, but I'm sure craft, a type of windlessness, this kind of stillness, where there's no breeze at all, just everything hangs straight down. But the weathermen don't ever talk about that. They don't say, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a very cold day, but so dry, there'll be no wind. Sometimes they'll talk about the wind if it's brushing up, but they don't talk about it when it's not there. I want more conversations about things that aren't about to happen. What isn't there? I am wearing slippers. It's not advisable in the zero. I'm wearing slippers because there's no wind. I knew there wasn't a wind, so it makes it very slippery. Slippery. I don't think I have enough information coming into my head. It's a lack of stimulation. I read Pride and Prejudice and Jane Eyre, and I'm thinking about Moby Dick. I was thinking about Moby Dick, and then someone tweeted that they, and this was coincidental, that they read Moby Dick, or they couldn't read it, until they began imagining my voice reading it to them. And this was at the moment I was thinking about reading Moby Dick, and that completely derailed my plan, and I became a bookless wanderer. I really want to read Moby Dick, but things like that will get in the way. Because then I'll be thinking to myself, well, I'm reading to this Twitter fella. Somehow. He's made me do it. Call me Ishmael. Now, I can't imagine why my voice fits with Herman Melville or that first person of Ishmael. I don't think that I have any Ishmaelism. 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 Ishmael. Ishmaelism. 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 Ishmael. You start dancing like Tevye. Oh, this is not Ben. I was walking on somewhat ploughed, or at least tire flattened snow, but now I'm not. Let me read a couple of pages of Moby Dick. Maybe I'll read them to that fellow. I'll put that in together. And then we'll turn it into a thing that it isn't, that it wasn't, that it wanted to be, and somehow defeat the enigmatic blockage, the thing that arose before me like a thing that was arising inside me already, but in a slightly different robe. I'll push through that way, the kind of explosive double meta presentation. It's like when I was a boy. I wasn't terribly brave. But there was this time at the swimming pool where I decided I was going to do a flip off the diving board. I had never practiced. It was unexpected. I suddenly thought, well, I really would like to do a flip. I think I can do it. This diving board is high enough. I'm feeling quite brave. And so I'm standing there over Longby as this process is going on inside my head as I'm working my way toward the thing that I want. And when you're young, it takes a while to connect an urge with an action, especially when it's unexpected. It's easy to do something if you've done it many times, but if it's completely unexpected and it's something new coming up through you, you have to wait. It's like a little flower coming up through the top of your head, and then it does, and you feel the presence of it, and you have to pluck it and look at it and say, oh, I'm going to do a flip off this diving board. So during this interim, it was not a bully, this boy, but he was an observer of things and a caller-outer of things. He read every sign. He was the kind of boy that if somebody got hurt, he would start shouting about it right away. Somebody did something. He was a tattletale, but much broad, of a very broad variety, just constantly narrating everything that was happening. And it was on this day that I learned that he also had a predictive facility. He was prescient. He could feel things in the air. So as I'm standing there, he calls out, why don't you do a flip? Which was exactly what I wanted to do, but how could I know? And I stared at him. I had quite an angry stare, I think, when I was young. Things made me upset. I don't think it was anger, really. It was frustration. I couldn't in this instance, expressed myself as freely as I wanted, and I had rarely ever expressed myself. I was in a little prison of air, as I think many children are. A mild breeze now. The weathermen were wrong. At least the ones I tuned into the back corner channel of my mind. So we'll read a few pages of Moby Dick. And then, if that's pleasing, we'll read a few more. And I will direct this reading to the fellow that recently completed reading it in my voice inside his head. And perhaps later on he'll let me know how well it matched up. Wouldn't it be lovely, and I will try to find this out, if this Twitter person is the same boy, the same tattletale from my youth who called out that I should do the flip and foiled me? What if he's always been there foiling me with these tiny dreams? I'm just about to do a small maneuver, and there he is, shouting it out. Now, I haven't read Moby Dick in 20 years. It's one of those books. When I read it, it's enormous. It's like picking up a rock off the ground and telling yourself you're going to sculpt a figurine from it. It seems just, you neither want to do it, it doesn't seem possible, you don't have any sculpting tools. When you pick up Moby Dick, it feels as though you've never read a book before in your life, because it's so heavy and thick, and even the reading of it itself at the beginning is ponderous and bizarre. But then, somewhere along the way, you start steamrolling through it. It's unexpected. I've spoken of this in a recent walk. The way good books can be difficult. They don't always have to be difficult, but there are many good books that are, you're really learning a whole aesthetic type of language. You're learning all the different places that will be experiencing, feeling, all the places in your mind that will be having some thought, are being constructed for you during the opening pages. And that can be 50 pages, it can even be 100 pages. Something is being constructed, and then thereafter, those places can be stimulated and inhabited by the contents of the book. But you have to experience that several times, many times, before you trust it. So, when I read, what was it? What is his name? Fellow David Mitchell, Jacob de Zoet, 1,000 Summers of Jacob de Zoet, is that it? De Zoet. Very, very hard going, 50 pages. And then, such a beautiful steamroll. You have been constructed, and then you are rendered. And that is what it's like. A good book constructs you, constructs itself inside you, and then renders you inside that, and you are enlarged. Let us begin then. Moby Dick. For my good Twitter friend, who I don't know yet.
But
who was there when I was appointed to my first ever flip and foiled me. And was there quite recently. This Moby Dick reading in my voice.
In my voice.
Tweet.
Tweet. that stopped that me in
stopped
my
me
tracks.
In my tracks.
I'm restarting.
I'm restarting.
To get up and running.
Get up and running.
In just a moment.
I apologize. There was a very poor version of the mimetic simultaneous talking that I mentioned earlier. And what I realized while I did it is that I really need there to be another person whose face and whose being I can latch on to like a cipher that I can draw upon. Otherwise, I can't do it. So I can't. I need a real person. Even my own self, I can't do it with my own audio. So there is that. This the story of my life is that I present theories, and this is how I am, and then fall straight down into the well. But don't we all? Isn't that even rather lovely? So I was fishing around looking for my copy of Moby Dick, which, as I remember it, looks like a loaf of bread pressed wetly into the corner of a bookshelf. So many pages. It must be one of those books that falls apart the most rapidly. The bigger the book, the harder the fall. And the quicker, too. So, but I couldn't find it. And also, I know I'd written all sorts of tiny little scratchings and markings in it. And I was hoping to read some of those. I'll keep looking for it. I don't know. Maybe I'll find it. So I have to make do with the Kindle version of Moby Dick, which doesn't quite have the isness of the real paper loaf of bread book. So we'll just go right in. I should mention that the Twitterer's name is Eric Colossal. Eric Colossal. And I'll try to post a little picture of his tweet as evidence. Is anything in Twitter, can that be used as evidence? Can it? It seems so insubstantial. Like presenting a post-it note in a court of law. I don't know. But, so anyway, Moby Dick, Chapter 1, Loomings. I'm going to try to keep myself here from commenting. I have a great urge to comment because I completely forgot that there was a chapter one called Loomings. But yet, there it is. So we'll just start over right now. Chapter one, Loomings. And now I can't see the book at all. Need a light. Chapter one. Loomings. Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how long precisely, having little or no money in my purse and nothing particular to interest me on shore, I thought I would sail about a little and see the watery part of the world. It is a way I have of driving off the spleen and regulating the circulation. Whenever I find myself growing grim about the mouth, whenever it is a damp, drizzly November in my soul, whenever I find myself involuntarily pausing before coffin warehouses and bringing up the rear of every funeral I meet, and especially whenever my hypos get such an upper hand of me that it requires a strong moral principle to prevent me from deliberately stepping into the street and methodically knocking people's hats off. Then I account it high time to get to sea as soon as I can. This is my substitute for pistol and ball. With a philosophical flourish, Cato throws himself upon his sword. I quietly take to the ship. There is nothing surprising in this. If they but knew it, almost all men in their degree, some time or other, cherish very nearly the same feelings towards the ocean with me.
There now is your insular city of the Manhattoes, belted round by wharves and Indian Isles, by coral reefs. Commerce surrounds it with her surf. Right and left, the streets take you waterward. Its extreme downtown is the Battery, where that noble mole is washed by waves and cooled by breezes, which a few hours previous were out of sight of land. Look at the crowds of water-gazers there. Circumambulate the city of a dreamy Sabbath afternoon. Go from Corlear's Hook to Coenties Slip, and from thence by Whitehall northward. What do you see? Posted like silent sentinels all around the town stand thousands upon thousands of mortal men fixed in ocean reveries. Some leaning against the spiles, some seated upon the pierheads, some looking over the bulwarks of ships from China, some high aloft in the rigging, as if striving to get a still better seaward peep. But these are all landsmen of weak days, pent up in lath and plaster, tied to counters, nailed to benches, clinched to desks. How then is this? Are the green fields gone? What do they hear? But look, here come more crowds, pacing straight for the water and seemingly bound for a dive. Strange. Nothing will content them but the extremest limit of the land. Loitering under the shady lee of yonder warehouses will not suffice. No. They must get just as nigh the water as they possibly can without falling in. And there they stand, miles of them, leagues. Inlanders all, they come from lanes and alleys, streets and avenues, north, east, south, and west. Yet here they all unite. Tell me, does the magnetic virtue of the needles of the compasses of all those ships attract them thither? Once more, say you're in the country, in some high land of lakes. Take almost any path you please, and 10 to 1 it carries you down in a dale and leaves you there by a pool in the stream. There is magic in it. Let the most absent-minded of men be plunged in his deepest reveries. Stand that man on his legs, set his feet a-going, and he will infallibly lead you to water, if water there be in all that region. Should you ever be athirst in the great American desert, try this experiment, if your caravan happen to be supplied with a metaphysical professor. Yes, as everyone knows, meditation and water are wedded forever. And so with that being said, with that being spoken, with a little bit of Moby Dick under our belt, I feel as though I may continue along some other channel, other pathway in the universe, where I'm not exactly doing what Eric Colossal commands me indirectly to do in his tweets. But in some way, I suppose, I'm doing exactly what he always wanted. If you enjoyed the reading of Moby Dick and would like to hear some more, feel free to say so. As I said in my little walk, it does need a bit of room to roam, a bit of space. You've got to make room so that all these little buildings can be constructed, all these gardens planted, and all these ships set out to sea, one particular ship, all these characters brought to life. It's like a Hollywood set. You watch it build up slowly, and then you inhabit it. But unlike a movie, you have to watch it all go up. The cameras start rolling, the main actors arriving. set decoration. Then suddenly, you're in it. You're the hero, and the waves are splashing on you. And you are, like Ishmael, gone to sea. I'm Sherwin Sleeves. This is the Radio Ghost. Thank you for joining me. We'll see you again soon. And as I always like to say, it's tired, and I am late. It's tired, and I'm late. The old frozen fire turn out late. Tomorrow we'll slip through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sweep. It's tired and I'm late. Untie your candles, I just lit the skates. We're sitting in sleepless light, come dreams that we're sleeping right. But now it's time to sweep.
Hit a ball now.
It's tired and I'm late. Your frozen fire turn out late. Tomorrow we'll sleep through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sweep.